Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning, October 18th. 37 degrees and mostly cloudy skies right now. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, we've got meteorologist Thomas Gebor. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning, Leslie. Hope that you had a wonderful weekend, and I hope everyone listening was able to get outside and take advantage of this weekend. The weather was absolutely beautiful. We're starting off this morning. It's not too bad out there, but as you mentioned, we are starting to see more cloud coverage, and that will continue to be the case as we go through today, because as quickly as we had a beautiful weekend, we got another system that's currently on the way from the west right now, kind of knocking on the doorstep of northwestern Utah. So as the clouds increase, the rain chance will start to eventually increase as well. So the chance for rain will start to increase as we go from noon to around 3 o'clock, and the daytime high in Park City today around 51 degrees. So still going to be relatively mild out there, but with that rain chance increasing from this afternoon into tonight, it'll go around to a 90% chance for wet weather. We'll be looking at predominantly rain first thing during the afternoon, and then transitioning to a rain and snow mix, and then transitioning over to snow as we go through tonight as the overnight low drops to 30 degrees. So as we go from tonight into tomorrow morning, we'll have that chance of snow, where in Park City, 1 to 3 inches of accumulation going to be a possibility. And also in the Wasatch Mountains, we have a winter weather advisory that will be going into effect this afternoon as well, lasting through noon tomorrow, where within the advisory, within the mountain, so think above 7,000 feet, we could see accumulations kind of on the magnitude of 3 to 6 inches, and then possibly getting a little bit higher than that as you travel up in those elevations. So we'll be looking at another round of possibly some snow with minor accumulations down into Park City. The high tomorrow only 41 degrees, but as we go through tomorrow as well, the chance for wet weather will be decreasing. Tomorrow morning, we start off with about a 50-50 chance, then dropping to around 20% into the afternoon, and then we'll transition back to a snow down, back to a rain and snow mix before we dry things out and really cool things down Tuesday night under a partly cloudy sky with a low of 27 degrees. Then for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're going to settle back into some beautiful weather, where on Wednesday the high will be right around 50 degrees under a mostly sunny sky, near freezing again for Wednesday night. But for both Thursday and Friday, daytime high is going to be in the middle to upper 50s. The lows will continue to be near freezing, but the mostly sunny skies will continue. The second half of this work week shaping up to be quite nice, and we'll kind of carry that over into this upcoming weekend. But as we go from Saturday night into Sunday, another system could be on the way, so we'll bring back the chance for wet weather as overnight lows continue to be in the 30s with daytime highs dropping back into the middle and upper 40s.
Okay, thanks so much, Thomas.
You're welcome.
It's 8:09. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be talking with Doug Clyde, a member of the High Valley Transit District Board of Directors. He's got an update on the progress the district's making, as well as the need for increased funding. Then CEO of Stein Collection, Russ Olson, and Human Resources Director Michelle O'Brien talk about their decision to increase their minimum hourly wage to $18 an hour. And while it's so why is it so difficult to find staff these days? Finally, Snyderville Basin Recreation Director Dana Jones will be in with a monthly update with details about some of the new programs and the facility closures. Taking a look at some local news now, the affordable housing crisis is getting worse in Heber City. KPCW's Ben Lassiter explains.
Heber City Planner Jamie Barron tells KPCW the city currently needs about 600 more homes for households that earn less than the area median income, which was approximately $90,000 in 2020. Barron told the City Planning Commission on Tuesday the city's oversupplied on houses that are only affordable to upper-class buyers. Barron said projections show Heber's population will grow by about 2,000 in the next 5 years. During that time, he estimates the demand for more affordable homes will increase by about 400, but that need could be satisfied by new projects in the pipeline. City Planning Commissioner Sid Ostergaard says the numbers underscore the need that's been felt for years.
I'm glad I moved here in 98 because there's no way I could afford being in Heber Valley now, not even. So it is, this is one of my things that I am strongly for, is being able to, new developers coming in, to hold them to the standard of getting affordable housing for. I have 6 kids, only one of them live here currently. Yeah, Heber Valley, it's, as I call it, it's God's country, and everybody wants to live here. So we need to make it affordable for our kids.
The presentation was an update to the city's 5-year housing plan. Barron also said the city would need to focus on meeting the needs of households with even lower incomes. That could require federal help.
Each of those income brackets, but the only way to hit those are federal tax credit developments. where they're actually receiving rebates and things like that from the federal tax credits in order to house those people.
He said Elmbridge Apartments in Northern Heber and Liberty Station Apartments near Walmart are examples of affordable homes that were created with federal assistance. Planning Commission members agreed affordable housing needs to be a priority going forward. Ben Lasseter, KPCW News.
Well, Summit and Wasatch County are moving forward to pursue a regional transportation system. On the phone with an update, I have a member of the High Valley Transit, also serving as a Summit County Council member, Doug Clyde. Good morning to you, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
So who's taking the lead on this regional transit service? Is that Summit County, or does Wasatch County get its own transit service?
No, that's sort of at the essence of what we're doing in creating High Valley Transit. Is, you know, there has been a need, and now it's well recognized, I think, and understood among both providers and employers and governments that, you know, we do need a larger transportation system. There is a lot of commuting back and forth from Wasatch and Park City, and we need to provide transit for that. The best way to do that going forward, rather than doing it piecemeal, one deal at a time, is to create High Valley Transit. High Valley Transit will now be a regional transportation provider that will be able to provide services into other counties and communities that have transportation needs in and out of the Summit County area.
Yes. So do we risk the problems, though, that we saw when Summit County was part of the Park City transit system? I mean, I guess what's the difference? I mean, Wasatch County could be paying money like Summit County did and not get the service that it thinks that its residents deserve.
Right. And that's that, again, is the difference between the structure. High Valley Transit is an independent district from the county. Unlike Park City, which ran its own transportation department, it was not even a service district. It was simply their transportation department. High Valley will be run by a board of directors that will represent the people who are paying money into it. So if and when we're fortunate enough to provide some service over to Wasatch, we will decide how those costs get paid, and what percentage of that is Wasatch and what percentage of it is for services within Summit County, and they will pay fees. They will also get representation on the board. The board of High Valley Transit is responsible that organization.
So those who live within the city limits of Park City, they pay too also into the system. So what benefits do they get?
The advantages that we're showing right now certainly are much expanded transportation abilities throughout the county with our micro and paratransit that I think is working wonderfully. And so among the various benefits that they get are being connected to a greater transportation network that services a larger portion of the community in a more equitable fashion.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, though, that the micro transit doesn't pick up in Park City.
Well, yeah, of course it doesn't. That is up to Park City. If Park City wants to provide something like micro transit, they can either contract with us, or they could do it themselves. But we are now the district that someone will contract with versus the other way around.
So in order for this regional transportation or transit district to go forward, will Wasatch County have to do what Summit County did, that is, go to the voters and ask for permission to increase those fourth and fifth quarter transit sales taxes?
That is a that's a matter of their own personal budgeting priorities. And, you know, transit can be paid for a variety of ways. I believe that they could actually pay for it out of their general fund if they decided that that was an appropriate use. It can also be paid through the taxes to the extent that they levy those taxes. Or they could find a grant. They could go out and apply for a grant and be able to fund transit that way as well. So everything and anything. They could go through similar processes to what we did, or they could just, you know, if we're talking about one specific transit component, it's possible they could just fund it out of their existing taxes or general fund or what have you.
Sure. And we did hear at the last meeting from Interim Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh that his preference is to serve all of Wasatch County, not just Heber City or the Mayflower Resort. Would that happen before all of Summit County receives service?
Well, it's where we provide service simply is a function of demand, right? So... And you can only create demand where one of two things happen. Either you have a large intercept parking lot, or you have a population cluster, a node of population that is sufficient to require transportation. You know, for example, we are at that point. And have successfully demonstrated that that is the case with Camas and Francis. But you're talking about population masses that are that large, essentially, and concentrated before you can even provide a fairly minimal transportation service. So all of Wasatch County is great, but there are just a lot of areas, just like in Summit County, that probably have no suitable transit for them because they're just too rural.
Yeah. So you'd mentioned, I guess what's the next step here? You'd said that Wasatch County representatives would be named to the High Valley Transit Board. Does that happen before you see some money out of them?
Oh, no. Your representation comes with a check. You have to write us a check before you get representation.
Okay. Do they know how much that check needs to be?
We haven't even talked to them about what sort of service it might want to be. And again, it's like anything. It's like, you know, the Camas line. It started off with somebody who was willing to allow us to use their parking lot. And put up a couple of banners. We collected a few riders, began a little momentum, and slowly that evolved into a bus stop and a parking lot that we own, I believe, and the beginnings of a real life transit center over there. So they're small and incremental, and ultimately, like everything else, you know, once you get involved in it and once you start to really understand what your full capabilities are, especially with things like microtransit and paratransit, you find lots of other services that you can provide.
So could Park City be part of this regional transportation system if they wanted to kind of give up control to High Valley?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, they could join. I'm sure it's very complicated, but they could certainly join, yeah.
All right. So what does this all mean, then, for Summit County taxpayers? I mean, what we've heard is that the proposed budget will be increasing by more than a third. Director Caroline Rodriguez saying that they will also be increasing the service area. But where does all this money go toward, new money?
Where does all the new money come from or go to?
Where is it coming from? And I'm guessing it's just because we only had a half a year budget. Is that part of this?
It's part of it. It's also that, frankly, we're just we're moving a little bit faster. We're seeing new opportunities, which we're taking advantage of. And that really, and, you know, and that comes with expanding service. As you saw in that staff report, it's commensurate with a 54% increase in service. But also mixed into that budget are capital costs, right? Because we have a brand new startup transit system here. And so, there are buildings, temporary buildings, equipment, tools, those sort of things are also being purchased. So they represent, that budget represents both a mixture of capital expenditures and cost of transit.
One of the capital expenditures is apparently this $1.6 million new transit facility. At the last board meeting, we heard from Director Rodriguez that it could be, though, reimbursed by the ARPA funds through UDOT. I'm just curious what a transit center has got to do with the pandemic.
There are lots of things about pandemic funding that that I have never bothered to delve into, but a lot of that money has been broadly used. I think if you poke around in the community, you'll find a lot of people who have managed to take advantage of that. And, you know, to the extent that the pandemic has created problems that could be eliminated by transit or relieved by transit, it's probably appropriate. But yeah, I don't know the precise details of that.
Yeah, so have you heard, because she had said that she thought that she hadn't heard whether or not that would funding would go through and that they'd have a better idea later. Any update there? Do we know that?
No, we haven't. No, not since, not since that meeting. No mm-hmm. updates.
And where's the new transit facility planned for?
We're going to have a temporary facility out at Ecker Hill, which is simply a matter of the fact that the way this came about, we didn't have time to go through the land use processes necessary to determine where we could put a permanent facility. I think at a staff level, the permanent facility is most likely going to be located over in the Silver Creek Village area in and around Home Depot.
Okay. So there's another $3.4 million left of that $5 million increase in the budget. What are some of those other capital costs that we're talking about?
Boy, I'd have to be looking at the line item of the budget to point those out, but and again, it's a complicated budget because it's a mixture of grants and fees and capital reserves. I can just say it's, you know, it's equipment, it's temporary facilities, it's planning for new facilities, engineering, architecture, all that sort of stuff is in there.
Okay. Do you work on a calendar year budget, so it would be something adopted by the end of the year for 2022?
Yeah, that's and actually one of the things that has caused this process to speed up a little bit was we were attempting to coordinate it with the overall county calendar county year in terms of budgeting, so that we consider all those things simultaneously.
So again, this is not a budget. The High Valley Transit District budget is not a budget that's approved by the county council. You say that they have their own autonomy and own authority, huh?
That's correct. Yeah. Now it's dominated by Summit County Council people at this point. But that is simply a matter of where the money comes from. The decisions on how the transit system operates is a function of the board, and the board membership is largely a function of who is paying for service and how much are they providing, how much are they getting.
Yeah, so will the county then hire a new regional transportation planner since it's High Valley Transit that's now paying Caroline Rodriguez's salary as director of High Valley Transit?
Let's just say in the interim that we're working Carolyn double shifts, so I don't know that I don't believe that we will need a duplicate of Caroline by any means, but right now she's doing work in both camps.
Hmm. So maybe just some help, it sounds like.
Yeah, maybe just some help. Sure. Though, you know, just like anything else, it may be that, you know, when service is provided for Wasatch, that they're going to do some, you know, some bus stops or transportation facilities over there. Well, we would have a similar situation for new services in Summit County.
And finally, High Valley Transit looks like their micro transit service is seeing increasing ridership every week. Is this sustainable?
Oh, I think so. It is, you know, frankly, it's it's one of the areas where, one of the many areas where it was clear that we had to break with Park City Transit, was that at the time Park City would only consider the larger buses for which they could grants, et cetera, and, you know, and they're also, you know, a standard 40-passenger bus is also a very durable piece of equipment. It happens to be extremely expensive, but it's a very durable piece of equipment. At the same time, regardless, it makes absolutely no sense for one 40-passenger bus to be traveling to Silver Creek with one person on board to turn around and perhaps even make the return trip empty. So the High Valley, the micro transit makes extraordinary sense. And every time we make an improvement in it, we find that it is wildly accepted. We're very pleased. The micro transit combined with the paratransit is in fact a demonstration of one of the aspects of transportation as a land planning component, and that is that these things help provide equity in our community. And by equity, it means people, in this case of micro, that may have mobility issues. It may not be easy for them to get into town. Those people now have a service.
Okay. Hey, Doug, anything else you wanted to mention of note that we didn't cover?
I think we're good. Thank you very much, Leslie.
All right. Thank you. Doug Clyde, again, a member of the High Valley Transit Board of Directors, also serving as a Summit County Council member. You can always get more information at highvalleytransit.org. Well, the Stein Collection, which includes the Stein Erickson Lodge, announced last week that it will be increasing its minimum hourly wage to $18 an hour, effective immediately. In the studio with details to talk about more about that and why something like that was necessary, I have the CEO of the Stein Collection, Russ Olson, along with Human Resources Director Michelle O'Brien. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, in addition to increasing the minimum hourly wage to $18 an hour, the press release said that all salaried employees will also be receiving increases to their compensation. I mean, what are we talking about here? Michelle?
Well, we made the decision that we would increase their salary the same amount that we went from our base wage up to the new wage.
So like 15, I think you were probably at, to 18?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And I mentioned, again, it's effective immediately. I mean, if you didn't do this, do you feel like you would have lost team members, managers?
Well, the local market, Leslie, is very challenging right now with all the lack of a labor pool out there, with the challenges of commuting, housing cost, inflation. It's been a very difficult summer, and so we thought we want to be at the top of the pay level. We thought we'd give these all our team members, all our employees, an increase. As Michelle said, we raised our managerial salaries up by $3 an hour like we did the line staff. So everybody basically got a $3 an hour raise. And we thought this would be the first step in retaining our current employees and making sure they felt wanted and appreciated and were paid a fair wage.
Yeah. The press release also says that the Steins Collection has always prided itself in providing the best working environment and the best benefits while paying these highly competitive wages. So can you talk a little bit about what those benefits look like, Michelle?
So I think we have a great benefit package for our team. We have, you know, of course, the health insurance and stuff like that. Our 401k plan is a very good plan, and our participation level is very, very high in that, which is great for people when they want to retire. And we just are looking to do fun things for our team. We do a lot of parties, of course, not during COVID times, but we're starting to get back into that now to thank our team and to take care of them. And then we just recently gave away 4 trips to Hawaii. So 4 of our team members get to go to Hawaii. And we try to do fun things like that to keep them engaged and feeling good about the job.
What did they have to do to get a trip to Hawaii?
They just had to put their name in a drawing.
And we base that on tenure. Employees who are there, you know, 20 years got more raffle tickets than those that were here a year, but we gave away 4 round trip trips to Hawaii.
How nice. So back to the benefits, though. I mean, we're talking vision and dental insurance as well as part of that healthcare
yes.
package?
Yep, we yep. are. And we do life insurance for our team as well. And, you know, of course, they get to park indoors because that's a nice benefit. And we have, you know, dry cleaning, laundry, and we also have an employee cafeteria so that the team gets their meal free while they're working.
Yeah, so also offer sick time, holiday pay?
We offer PTO, and that includes sick and vacation, so it's just combined. And they, you know, so that's for both our salaried managers, of course, and for our hourly team. And recently, we are now going to basically an unlimited PTO for our managers, which means they just need to request PTO, and as long as we can accommodate it with their expectations, they can take that PTO without having an actual limit.
Wow, that's nice. Parking, you mentioned. So everybody can park in, I mean, there's not much room in Silver Lake anymore.
I know. Between our team at Steins and our team at Chateau, the Chateau Deer Valley also has some parking that we utilize for our team. So between the two, we can accommodate our team.
Yeah. Carpooling, yeah, I'm guessing you encourage, or is
we
that
encourage
kind of
carpooling. It is challenging because many people do work 2 jobs, and so there is that associated with it. It's hard sometimes.
Yeah, how many employees do you have on the payroll?
We are around 480 at the moment, and we've got our H2B team coming in and other seasonal team starting in November.
We also have housing, Leslie, that we have over close to 200 beds we offer in the wintertime for staff that come in on a seasonal or even a full-time year-round basis. We have some of those houses are in, or the housing is in Salt Lake, and we provide a ride share that brings them up from Salt Lake. But Michelle and her team have found 200 beds to accommodate our staff.
Wow. So that 480, is that the year-round full-time staff, or is that at your...
That's year-round.
Okay. And then so what do you need to grow that by then to accommodate the winter season?
So we're thinking we're going to be between 680 and 700 this year. And our high water mark was 2019 when we were at about 720.
Wow. Does anybody, is anybody have to take the bus up there? I mean, there is a bus every half hour or so.
Many of our team do take the bus, especially once we get the seasonal group in. They don't have cars, and so we're very thankful for the transportation that we have in Park City and the ability to get them up. In fact, they extended the line through the fall this year to help with that, because we do have quite a few people that are in housing and don't have vehicles. So I know that helps us get our team up.
Yeah, and then the visa workers, do you have the numbers that you need? Are we seeing the numbers come back like we have in the past?
Definitely. We actually have filed for 185 H-2B visas, and my approvals have all been coming in, and so right now we're just waiting for two, which we don't expect a problem at this point.
Yeah. Rush, you've been doing this a long time. Have employees ever had this kind of leverage like they do today?
No, they have not. This is a very unique situation in the employment environment right now. We cannot, and I'm not sure there's a business in town that can find enough employees to fill all their open positions. I told my staff in a meeting last week, in my 35 years of being at Stein Erickson Lodge, this is the most challenging time when it comes to employment. And I think that's why we made the decision to increase our pay to our employees and enhance our benefits and provide flexible unlimited PTO to make sure that we take care of our existing core staff and invite others to come work and be part of our family.
So what's the global pandemic's role in all of this? It seems to have really increased, I think, the importance that employees maybe place on some kind of work-life balance, wanting more flexibility.
I think that's a big part of this. You know, we've had team members, employees who have decided that they don't want to work any longer and, you know, are staying home to take care of their children or their family and have just left the workforce for the time being. There's other people who are fearful of working because they are afraid of contracting COVID, so they've elected to stay home and not work. I think also, let's face it, the hospitality, the food and beverage industry is a very difficult and challenging industry. So people are finding other jobs where maybe they work at home and they don't have to go to their place of employment every day. So that has also been a challenge with people leaving the workforce.
Based on some news reports I was reading, there was a record number of U.S. job openings in June, some 10 million, as nearly 4 million Americans quit in June alone. What kind of drop-off did you see, if any? I mean, I guess you had to close, right? I mean, March 2020, there was no business.
Right. We did close, and we furloughed our year-round team. We did have some staff that stayed on, our higher-level managers, to kind of oversee things that were happening just to take care of the properties. And then when we brought our team back, I think we probably had about 15% that did not come back.
Wow.
Whether they found another job, whether they were going to move on anyway, it's hard to know. But that is what we saw. And then, you know, we had lower levels, of course, and normally supplement our staff in the summer with J-1 visas. And, of course, because many countries were shut down, the J-1 visas were not available.
Right. So I've seen that you've had some job fairs. Do you have more planned?
Yes, we will be hosting some job fairs in October and early November to try to supplement those remaining positions. And then our H-2B team will be coming in mid to late November, so that will supplement as well.
Yeah, so how many jobs are you short at this point if you add in the 185?
We've been running this summer probably about 15 to 20% short, and that we hope that's not the case this winter season with the H-2Bs coming in, but we would anticipate we'll probably run 10%+ short just based on the numbers we're looking at right now.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the Stein's Collection, you guys serve really upper-class guests, people with a lot of disposable income. It might be easier for you than just to pass on these costs to them? I mean, will we see an increase in rates and prices? And
well, we haven't done that directly. We just see supply and demand. This summer has been a very busy summer. It was equal to 2019, which was a record year. And we anticipate this winter right now to continue to be very strong with the bookings. And we have a, you know, basically a supply and demand similar to what the airlines do. If there's high demand, we're going to charge more for that. But it wasn't like we said we're raising our rates $3 an hour, so we got to charge $3 more for that hamburger. But there's certainly upward pressure. I think also contributing to that is the inflationary increases you're seeing in product. And some product we can't even get. We're seeing challenges with getting seafood in here because there's just not availability, or it's the supply chain isn't supplying us what we need. So the challenge will be what we have to pay for that product in addition to what it costs for us to produce it.
Yeah. What other things besides seafood are you having problem getting?
It is across the board, Leslie. We have challenges getting anything from, you know, like I said, seafood to beef to even vegetables and other products in our restaurants. But it goes over to trying to get linen into for our beds and other products, the guest supplies we put in our rooms. The lead time on those, when it used to be a matter of days or weeks, now it's sometimes months to get product in. If you order now, you may not get it till the spring.
Wow. A little bit late there at that point, then.
It is. It is. Yeah.
So, I mean, what's your sense? I mean, dealing with other kind of businesses in town, again, you kind of have the luxury that you can bump up. I mean, does everybody else have to follow suit?
It may be something that'll trickle down to every business in town if they want to retain and attract new employees. It's just a matter of the nature of the beast right now. When there's a limited pool, demand's going to be to increase wages, and unfortunately we had to do that, and I think it's great for our employees, and it's the right thing to do for our employees, but some companies may not be able to do that, and they're competing for the same employees that we are, and so I hope there's enough employees coming into town and, you know, things free up a little bit so we have a bigger pool of employees and people come back in the workforce, but we're not seeing that right now.
All right. Michelle, any other reflections from your
part? No. Thank you, though, for having us. We appreciate it.
All right. Russ Olson, Michelle O'Brien from the Stein Collection. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me now in the studio with an update from Basin Recreation, I have Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's start off with the Swing for Sports wrap-up. What's this?
You know, we just finished up our annual Spring for Sports golf tournament where it's our primary fundraiser for all of our scholarship monies. So this year we had 84 players and we raised $8,000, and we were very happy with that. It turned out and the day was beautiful, and we had most of our staff out there helping out, and it was a great event.
Okay, and so that money then will go to help kids maybe wanting to play soccer or basketball or something like that?
Yes, and you know, this last summer we had a record number of kids applying for scholarships. And in fact, we went above and beyond what we had in the scholarship fund and pulled some money out of our operations fund so that we could actually give all the scholarships that people applied for.
All right. Any idea how many, what those numbers look like?
You know, I know it was over 15,000 last year because we added a little bit more to it.
Oh, money, but in terms of number of kids you're helping.
Oh, you know what? I'm not sure about that.
Okay. All right. Well, coming up the first weekend of November, it's the Park City Ski and Snowboard Ski Swap. That means that the field house will partially close?
Yes, it does. And this is something that is an annual event for the Park City Ski and Snowboard organization. They, I believe, did not do it last year because of COVID. So they are really excited to get back in. They are doing some special measures to, you know, reduce the numbers and social distancing, so there will be timed entry. So if you want to come this year, make sure you go on their website and see exactly how to do that. But they are very excited about that, and there will be you won't be able to use parts of the field house. The field house won't be fully closed, but there'll be the field itself will be closed and for the event.
Okay, you keep the walking track above open, as well as.
That I believe we are going to be able to do that this year, yes.
Yep. Okay, and it's budget season, so what does that mean for Basin Rec?
You know, this will be my first budget as the director of Basin Rec, and this year we are taking the budget to the board of directors this week for approval, and after that it goes off to county council for final approval. But really, like many organizations and businesses all over the country, we are hurting for staff and we're looking for people. So our focus on budget this year, or for 2022, is going to really be on staff and people and making sure that we are offering a pay that's competitive and being able to kind of help people to work for us, because it's fun to work for us. I mean, we're recreation, but if we can't pay enough for people to be able to work for us, then we're not going to be able to attract the people that we need. So we are really trying to focus on staff and really increasing not only our salaries of our staff, but also increasing the number of staff, the number of permanent staff that we're hiring. So keep an eye out, because we do have some jobs posted.
Okay. And you're offering more than also for like the minimum hourly wage, or
we are looking at doing that. I mean, I was just talking to Ken over at the Mark last week, because he's having the same problems that we are, finding, you know, front desk staff for the field house. And we know that the ski resorts are going to be paying $15 an hour this year. So we're looking at really trying to kind of figure out ways that we could increase our starting wage and our minimum wage of our staff.
Okay. Let's see. The Trailside East Park project. That's the newest park there, next to the Trailside Park that was already there?
Correct. It's currently a big open space right now, and it might be a little hard to picture that we're going to try to put two very flat things on a very sloped surface. But we did go out for bids on that project, put out the RFP. We're very pleased to get four qualified bidders, and we have narrowed that down. We are going to be presenting that at our board meeting on Thursday night, and if the board approves it, we'll be awarding that contract, and the park will be built next year.
And what are we building there?
We are going to be building two full-size fields, restroom facilities, parking lot, a bike shelter and bus stop, and some pavilions and some trails that go around the area.
All right. And you also have a project plan for the bike park. Is this to expand it or just to add additional features? Or
actually, we're working on adding some additional features, and that has already started. They're doing the dirt work right now. It's going to be we're adding a jump line, and it's going to be just an awesome project that's going to be doing, because people will be able to actually race each other down a line going down the hills. It's going to be really neat. It won't be done until after the winter, but they are working on it right now. So if you go out there, part of the bike park is kind of fenced off because they are in there with heavy equipment.
Okay. Willow Creek Pond is closed. Is that for the entire winter? Or?
It is. We needed to close it for the winter. It's about that time. So we will be, hopefully, if we get enough cold and enough snow, it'll be open, you know, during the winter season for ice skating and things like that on the pond. But right now it is closed for folks to bring their pups in.
Okay. And you also have the Runamuck Fall Cleanup events happening. What events do you got going?
You know, on October 28th, November 4th, November 13th, we are going to be doing some Runamuck cleanup and some work events. Those will be from 8 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. So come on by, because we need all the hands we can get. Runamuck is our largest and our most popular park and most popular trailhead. And from what I've been able to tell, it is also the largest fenced dog park in the United States.
Okay. Again, so if you have a dog, come help clean it up. Let's see. You're also offering some new programs at the field house, including pickleball clinics.
Yeah, you know, we did some of that last year, and we're going to be continuing that this year. So those will be on Saturday afternoons. We're going to be doing some learn to play clinics and some skills clinics. And that's starting October 30th. You'll be able to come on in on Saturday afternoons. You know, check the website. You can see exactly what kind of things are out there for that. And we also have a number of new classes coming in. There's a CPR class that's going to be starting here soon. We're going to be doing a Qigong for Health class.
I think it's Qigong.
Thank you.
I think so. Okay.
And a 3-on-3 basketball class. But there's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be starting in the field house now that the winter's hit.
Okay. Also, just wanted to ask you, in terms of what we saw at some of the trailheads, is that getting better managed?
You know, we are... have a really good way of actually keeping track of our numbers right now, and we're seeing actually less numbers at the trailheads than we have seen in past years. So that's a good thing, and I think part of it probably is that we do have our trail patroller that's out there, and he is really making a lot of contacts. He's talking to a lot of people. We're trying to really disperse that use to other trailheads that might not be as busy as some of the more popular ones. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, always the continuing problems in the neighborhoods with, you know, we hear complaints of speeding cars and things like that. And not a lot that Basin Rec can do about that. You know, all we can do is really kind of inform the people, kind of manage our trailheads. The parking at the trailheads is getting better now that we have the patrol out there who can, you know, actually write citations if people are parking illegally. But even more than that, we want to let people know what is legal, what they can do, and where they should be going if, you know, if a trail's full. And I think that's been fairly successful.
Okay. And then earlier, as we were talking about the employment opportunities, I mean, how many open jobs do you have?
Right now, we always need people at some of our seasonal and part-time positions with the Parks Department, with the Trails Department, front desk at the field house. We're looking for folks. We just raised that salary up a little bit. All of our positions while you're working for us come with the free membership to the field house, and we're really, you know, working on trying to improve the culture of our organization so that people really want to work for us. People will tell their friends and work for us. So we do have quite a few seasonal and part-time positions. We're always looking for lifeguards. We've actually had to cut the hours of our pool because we can't find lifeguards.
Okay. All right. Do you have the lifeguard training, or do they need to be already certified?
You know, we do hold periodic lifeguard training, mm-hmm. so that if folks are interested, definitely get a hold of us, and we can set something up, because if we can get the lifeguards, we can open the pool. I mean, it's there, it's heated, it's ready to go, but if we don't have a lifeguard to sit there, then we can't keep the pool open.
Okay. Dana, we'll see you next month. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Well, after announcing its intent to annex 1,200 acres of land to the east of Park City last week, the Park City Council is scheduled to vote on that annexation petition at a special meeting this afternoon. KPCW's Sean Higgins has details.
Park City calls the land they hope to annex Southeast Quinns Junction, but the land is also known as Richardson Flat. The land has been wrapped up in controversy ever since the town of Hideout announced its own plans to annex into the area in the summer of 2020, sparking a legal battle between the town and Summit County that is still ongoing. Hideout's original plans included some of the land now being claimed by Park City. Those plans were challenged in court, citing a 1998 development agreement with Park City stipulating the land was to be preserved as recreation and open space in exchange for the ability to develop the Empire Pass area. Hideout then excluded that land from their annexation plans. The 1,200 acres would increase Park City's size by approximately 10% if the annexation is approved. The land includes the 344-acre city-owned Clark Ranch property, which was identified as a potential affordable housing location by the council earlier this year. The rest of the land is owned by the United Park City Mines Company. Monday's meeting is the second step in the process after last week's annexation notice was sent to Summit County and surrounding property owners. According to a report by city staff, if the council accepts the annexation petition on Monday, a process would then be triggered where it is reviewed by the city recorder, city attorney, planning director, city engineer, director of public works, fire marshal, and police chief. The Planning Commission would then consider and review the petition before holding a public hearing and making a recommendation to the council. The council would also hold a public hearing before voting on the annexation. Monday's meeting is scheduled to begin at 3:30 p.m. The full agenda, as well as details on how to participate, can be found through a link on kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.